Jack Robinson joins us. Hey, Jack.
Morning, Steve.
Jack is editor of the Sacramento Business Journal. We check in with him on Fridays to talk business. This week, we got some more news about changes in Midtown Sacramento. BevMo, the national liquor store chain, will be moving into the former site of The Beat, the iconic local record store. Is Midtown going suburban here? What's going on?
You might think so, given the news we've had last month. Last week, we talked about some local longtime merchants closing. But now with Habit Burger and BevMo moving in, it's sort of tempting to conclude that the national retailers have suddenly discovered Midtown and are all moving in. But I don't think Midtown purists have anything to worry about. For the most part, national chains don't like Midtown really any better than residents of Midtown like them.
Well, yeah, Midtown kind of prides itself on being unique and different. Mm-hmm. So does this have to do with demographics? I'm thinking McDonald's and Applebee's probably know that hipsters are not their crowd, right?
Of course, you never know what the cool kids will like, but these chains tend to have very rigid formulas and Midtown doesn't fit them very well. They want lots of parking, for instance. They want lots of people living nearby. They want high traffic volumes and they want to put up big signs. So Midtown is really not good for any of those things, and even though it is probably the hottest retail and restaurant district in the region. Mark Anderson, our restaurant reporter, points out that if anything, we see fewer national chain outlets in Midtown than we did 10 years ago. Think of California Pizza Kitchen, which closed, for example. Locally based chains, on the other hand, seem to do very well, like Cafe Bernardo and Crepeville and Jack's Urban Eats. They are more agile, I think, and they understand the market better than the national chains. There are some exceptions, though, Chipotle and Starbucks. But I think it's fair to predict that Midtown will keep its local character.
We had some health news this week with UC Davis announcing a new leader for their medical school. Her name is Julie Freischlag, a professor and chief surgeon at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. She takes over in February. What does this mean for the medical community?
First of all, it's good to have the job filled. I think the medical industry is happy about that. Claire Pomeroy, a very dynamic doctor and researcher who had the job for 8 years, left in the spring. And UC Davis Medical Center is a sort of critical piece of the industry's core here in Sacramento. Certainly, many are impressed with Dr. Freischlag's credentials. She was the first woman to be chief surgeon at Johns Hopkins, for example. But I think there are some critics who may be disappointed that the chancellor didn't split up Pomeroy's job. At many universities, the medical school dean reports to the vice chancellor for health, which creates a sort of separation of powers. At Davis, the dean will continue to hold both jobs, and that worries some of the faculty who think that puts too much power in one office. The chancellor, incidentally, said she decided against splitting up the job to save money and to eliminate a layer of management.
There's a law that kicks in on October 1st, about a week and a half from now, that's pretty controversial in the business community. It'll essentially ban a long list of chemicals from products sold here in California. So are we going to see a lot of things suddenly missing from store shelves?
No, nothing will happen suddenly on October 1st, but this is legislation that's been in the pipeline for a long time, really, since 2008 when it was approved. It's called the Green Chemistry Initiative, and the idea is to set a standard for the rest of the country in limiting the use of toxic chemicals in consumer products. Supporters compare this to California's leadership on auto emissions, for example. But a lot of manufacturing and retailing folks are complaining that, and have for years, that it will raise costs and create a boatload of paperwork for them. I think the state has somewhat mollified those critics by unveiling this law in sort of a snail-like pace. Even though it kicks in October 1st, the state won't identify the first banned chemicals until April, and even then there will be only five out of a potential list of some 230 chemicals. Eventually, though, retailers will be responsible for keeping stuff off the shelves if manufacturers don't comply with these new rules.
Let's talk about the housing market. A real estate brokerage firm called Redfin reported a big drop in Sacramento home sales in August, something like 11% from a year earlier. What should we make of that?
It looks like more the like a natural swing of the pendulum rather than anything serious to worry about. The volume decline probably reflects rising interest rates more than anything else. But it's also some evidence that this sort of nutty market we've had for the last year is cooling off. Institutional investors are backing off finally. These are the big hedge funds and private equity companies that have been buying up homes to rent them out. So they're not distorting the market as much by, you know, pushing wheelbarrows full of money to the curb every time a home goes up on the market. So houses are getting fewer offers, staying on the market a little bit longer, and some say even that lenders are starting, shocking as this is to hear, that lenders are starting to get a little bit more flexible and to help families qualify for loans. So overall, I think most people think this is a good thing. The market is healthy, and it just seems to be getting a little bit normal after 5 years of craziness. It's about time.
Thanks, Jack.
You're welcome, Steve.
That's Jack Robinson, editor of the Sacramento Business Journal. We talk with him on Friday mornings about the region's economic news, and you can hear previous business roundups at capradio.org/business. I'm Steve Milne, Capital Public Radio News.